We have looked really at some of the preliminaries of relationship evangelism, and what I want us to do in the next hour or so is to look at what I call the practical applications. Okay? Now we understand some of the forces that bind us, some of the mindset that we should have, and now what we need to do in order to get started. I think that all good evangelism begins, personal evangelism, relationship evangelism, starts with some sort of organized method in your own life. So the first step is what I call an evangelistic prospect list. You need to make one. Okay? A prospect list. And what we mean by, of course, the prospect list are of those individuals that we know that we would like to see brought to Christ. And once you, and you don't want to make it really long, okay? Don't write 100 names down. That'll just discourage you. All right? Think of, you know, 4 or 5, maybe even 10 at the most, and say, these are some people that I know. Write them down. And let me tell you, put them somewhere where you will see it every day. Okay? Now, I think that that's important so that you remind yourself daily. Because remember, our lives are fast-paced, right? If we don't think, we'll let opportunities start to go by. I'll tell you another thing I would do, and I do this, is I pray that God will open opportunities for me to share the message with those on that list. Okay? And, you know, remember, God's on your side in this. He wants to see them come to Him too. So He's going to help orchestrate in their lives opportunities for you to be there. He wants to use you in those people's lives to help win them to Christ. So, it's just a list of names. And I tell you what, I want you to think just a moment. If you're taking notes, and we're going to take about 30, 45 seconds here, and if you want to talk to your husband or husbands to your wife, do so. Jot down 3 or 4 names right now of somebody that you know that you would like to see brought to Christ. You can go ahead and start that list now. Now, by doing this, let me tell you what you've done and why it's important to have such a list. Remember, an important key to leading people to Christ is keeping them always on your mind and in your prayers. Okay? That's something that you should want to do. Romans chapter 10 and verse 1. Look at how the Apostle Paul was concerning the house of Israel. If you'll notice... Do what? Yeah, I can see it. Announce and notice. He says, brethren, my heart's desire and prayer to God for Israel is that they may be saved. So Paul had on his prospect list the whole nation of Israel. You know, he said, I want to win them all. And he not only did he have them on his list, he was praying that they might be saved. So really, you need to keep in mind that consistent success in any venture, not just a spiritual one like this, but in anything, always involves you setting goals and keeping those goals in front of you so that you can always be motivated by what you're trying to do. And then to be successful in evangelism, same thing's true. You need to have a goal. And you need to say that these are the people that I want to see won to Christ. And we need to constantly be reminded of those goals. It's also good for us to have this list because it's going to focus you every day when you look at those people that are on that list. You're going to talk about them in your prayer life to God. And you don't ask God to do that. He's going to use you. What you ask God to do, you know, you ever noticed how we as people, when we pray, we like to tell God how to do it. We always want to give Him the details. Now, God, here's the way this can work out. If you would do this, and then move me over here, and then this could happen over there, and then the next thing you know, everything's happening. You know, like God needs that kind of help. You know, He doesn't need that kind of help. All we got to tell God is that, you know, here are some people, Father, these people are on my heart. These are who I've been thinking about. I know that you want to see these people come to the knowledge of the truth too. So, help me this day, or help me in my endeavors with these people to see opportunities, to have opportunities, to let the message of Christ flow from me to them. Okay? So that's one of the things that's important for us to do. Now, as you look at your list, and let me give you some examples of how to keep a list at all times. Because you may have people who move away and they're not converted, you may convert some, so others should take their place. But let me give you some good sources for prospects. Okay, as you just think about folks that you want to see, or if you couldn't think of anybody a while ago. All right, and I'm going to visitors at services, always good prospects, because they've really opened the door for you. They came. Okay, so if they're not going to be too surprised if they get a future contact from someone in the church. Okay, so somebody who comes by, visits with you, they're not going to be too surprised because you can always use the fact that, well, use it service the other day, we were glad you were here, you know, we just thought we would like to stop by and invite you to come back sometime. And I don't know if you do that, y'all have used visitor cards, Bill? Y'all give visitor cards when people come?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
We try to
make the contact. Okay. All right. We printed up some little cards and we'd give them to them and say, put your name and address. We might want to send you information about future meetings and, you know, that kind of stuff. Plus also now I know where you live and, you know, kind of like the mafia. Now I know where you live, you know. So we can come by and see you. Yes. About getting that information. Yeah. Well, you don't necessarily have to have a card. Just make sure somebody. Right, phone number and that kind of thing. And let me say something too, though, about things I've picked up over the years. You get a lot of that, but you know, there's things too that when you do go and visit people that you don't know very well, you know, don't do dumb things like go at 5:30 in the morning. I remember one time, and I'm telling you the truth. There was one time. I was at a place and we was preaching and the preacher was just, the evangelist in that area was just driving me crazy about wanting to go visit. He was still under the old door knocking times, you know. So I said, okay, I'll go with you tomorrow. And so the next day, he shows up where I'm staying at 6 o'clock a.m. Okay. I said, we surely ain't going now. And by the way, he's the same dude that wanted to talk about the piano. Okay, I'm not kidding you. And I said, we surely aren't going now. He said, yeah, I want to get to him. I said, there ain't nobody up. I wouldn't be up, but you're here, you know. And he said, well, get ready. We need to go. And I said, they won't want to talk to us. And he said, no, I got some people that will. So we get in his car, pull out of the house where I'm at about 6:30. 10:07, we're at the first person's house. I'm going to tell you how this day began and also how it ended. And why I never visit with this man again. Okay, I don't. I won't when I'm down there. I tell him I'm never going again with him. But we go to this house. We knock on the door. I mean, you know, I'm standing behind a tree because I know that this lady's going to be mad. And sure enough, after about 15 minutes of him pounding, doom, 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 she comes to the door. Robe on, eyes thick with sleep, and said, it's 10:07. And he said, you coming to church tonight? She said, it's 10:07. He said, I want you to meet Sam. I had to come out from behind the tree at that time. I said, hi, and then I went back behind the tree again. But you know, that was very embarrassing. So that happened that morning. That evening, there was a lady that went to church whose husband wasn't a member. She said she wanted us to talk to him. I said, does he know we're coming? She said, no. Okay, the old sabotage them when they come in. So we go over to her house. We're sitting on the front porch. She makes some real good Mississippi coffee. I mean, it was strong. Kind of put the teaspoon in, it stands up, you know. And so we're sitting there drinking it. She said, there comes his truck. So he coming down the road. He pulls into the driveway. And as he pulls up next to where he parks next to the porch, he turns his truck off, he looks up, and he sees us. Okay? He cranks his truck back up. And he floors it going toward the barn. Like that. On straight on down back to the field. She said, you all get him. The other preacher, you think I'm making this up? I ain't making this up. The other preacher leaps off the porch like the bionic man, running through the field toward him, saying, come on, Sam. So, you know, I'm sitting there, and here's the man's wife looking at me like, don't you care about my husband? The other preacher said, come on, running through the field. So I stroll down to the barn. He goes around this side of the barn, and the preacher's behind him. And he hollers as he turns, head him off. Well, he comes around back this side of the barn where I'm at. I ain't stopping this man. You know, I just stand there and watch him go by. And he goes on. And the other guy comes on. He said, I told you to head him off. I said, what do you want me to do, grab this man? I'm telling you the truth. This is what we wanted to do. And I kept saying, Lord, get me out of here. So he runs up to the house, through the back door, into the kitchen and into the restroom, and slams the door and locks it. And the other preacher's standing outside, knocking on the bathroom door. We know you're in there. We're not going to leave till you come out and talk to us. So after about 10 minutes, the old man comes out. His head's down like this, you know, and we go out on the porch. And that preacher and that man's wife hound this old man for about 40 minutes. And I just sit over there. That's not relationship evangelism. Okay? Use some sense when you deal with people. And never chase nobody. If they don't want to hear it, they don't want to hear it. Okay, and that just leave it at that. But that is a true story. Both of those incidents happened on the same day. It's how I started that day and how I ended that day. And that's why to this day, I don't visit with that fella no more. Because I ain't chasing nobody and getting people out of bed. So visitors at services, spouses of members that are not faithful make good prospects. And sometimes the spouse that's not a member, okay, will respond better to somebody other than their spouse, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So sometimes you can help out. You know, we often assume, well, these two people are married. One's a strong member of the church. The other doesn't come. You say, well, there's no sense us going. She has always told him. He knows what the truth is. Or vice versa. That's not necessarily so. You know, sometimes because of the intensity, some relationships can be too intimate to be conducive to a good flow of information, you know. And plus two, prophets are not without honor, save where? In their own country, right? So sometimes an outside voice is a little better. New residents in the neighborhood. You can go to the post office and find out who's moved in a particular area. If you're a small town like me, we all know when anybody moves and who they are, and stop by and say something to them. Relatives of members. Unfaithful members. Another evangelism gone crazy story. This was in Tennessee. This guy wanted me to go out, and they had made a prospect list. And they were starting with all the people who were members but had quit coming to church. And he says, we're going to go out and visit them, try to get them here during the meeting. That sounded good to me. So I go with this guy. And the first house we go to, this man and woman sitting on the porch. And they said, well, brother, whatever his name was, good to see you all. We hadn't seen you in a long time. And he said, is it meeting time? Because, you know, I was with him. And he said, yeah, this is Sam. He said, they said at that moment, well, we'll be there tonight. You know what we should have done? Shook their hands, got in the car and left. Because what was we trying to do? Get them there. They said this coming. Seemed genuinely glad to see us. Everything was going great until he said, well, we was just out rounding up lost sheep. Thought we'd come by and see you. They didn't come. I could tell the moment he said that, that sure stomped a toe. You know, I could tell by the look on both of them's face. You know, and they'd already said, we'll be there tonight, and we're genuinely glad to see him. They didn't know me. We should have just shook her hand, said, glad to see you, talk to you tonight, and left. But no, he had to say, as soon as they said, we'll be there tonight. And he said, yeah, okay. We just out rounding up lost sheep, thought we'd just stop by and see you. Well, you know, they realized they were the lost sheep he was after. And they didn't like that. Friends of members make a good group. Your own neighbors and friends. Co-workers make real good ones. That is, if you behave at work. Okay, if you don't behave at work, they probably won't. The credibility gap will be too big. Children of members. And prospects furnished by recent converts. A lot of times, people who are newly converted to Christ will give you names, not knowing that that's what they're doing. I sure wish they would come. You know, all right, now you got a lead. You see what I'm saying? So that's, but keep these people on your list, but concentrate on developing the list. Now, once you have these people listed, okay, here's some guidelines for determining priority. I mean, you can't go run and jump on all of them at one time and try to win them to Christ. So let me just share with you some things. First of all, you need to go to those that you might think are closest to obeying the gospel. Okay, like if you've got somebody who's been coming to church services for like several weeks, and they're there and they're coming all the time, that's probably a real good prospect and probably one that would be very good for you to talk to quickly, because they're probably awfully close. Secondly, go to those whom you have open communication. You know, there's some people that you're just able to talk to and say just about anything to, and they're okay with it. Those make good prospects. So those whom you have good open communication. Those who have shown spiritual interest. Capitalize on that. In the last 5 years, I baptized two people who work at my school. Actually, two people that work for me and three students that I had years ago, probably in the last 5 years. But I baptized my technology coordinator and I baptized a principal in one of the elementary schools. Mainly because, you know how I got the guy at the elementary school? We were sitting and talking one day, and he had several friends. He was probably 50, 51. He had several friends out of his crowd that he ran with, played golf with, golfing buddies and stuff. He had about three out of eight of them that hung together died. Okay? One in a car wreck. One was just found dead at home. And the other one had a massive stroke. All within a period of about 3 weeks. So one day we were standing out there at the school. We were talking, and he was talking about, he said, they just died. I said, well, we all headed that way. And I said, I said, are you a Christian? He said, no. And his wife was a member at one of the Christ churches over in town. And I said, that could very well be you. And I left it at that. So I went home to school, and my phone rang about 5-6 o'clock that night. And I picked it up, and he answered, and he said, what are you doing? And I said, just sitting here. And he said, you had supper? And he likes to cook. He's kind of a chef. And I thought, well, he's made something he wants me to try. I said, yeah, I've already eaten. I said, what you got on your mind? He said, well, I want you to go somewhere with me. And I said, where? He said, I'll tell you when I get down there. And he pulled up outside the house and he had his clothes. He said, I want to go be baptized. So, you know, all from just an offbeat conversation, standing on the porch. And then my technology coordinator, director, we'd had several conversations over the course of about 6 months on just different topics in the Bible. And she wasn't a Christian. She wasn't anything. And she came in one day, and it was during Christmas break. Our office is still open, you know, but nobody's there. And she said, it was on a Monday. And she said, can you know where a baptistry is? And I said, well, yeah. She said, I got my clothes in the car. She said, at lunch, I want you to baptize me. And so now she's going to church. And that all just came about from just basic little conversations about the Bible over a period of time. That's what I'm talking about. See, that's different than the idea we mostly have in our mind. We think about going and ringing doorbells and, hi, I'm Sam Dick. I'm with the Cloud Nine Church of Christ. And I'm here to talk to you about your soul because I love you, you know. And they slam the door in your face at that point. That's not how it works. But I had relationships with both of these people. You know what I'm saying? And I was able to talk to them, communicate with them. And so that worked. And they've been led to Christ, both of them going to church. So the things that we need to do is to look for that. Look for those who have shown spiritual interest but are in church. Those whose respect and friendship you've gained. People that are among your friends. And those who seem to come repeatedly across your path. Providence plays an important part in things. You know, I'm a firm believer in the fact that things aren't always just open to chance. I think God directs. And, you know, I don't know what he's directing, what he's not. I just need to jump every time there's an opportunity, you know. And but he does. And it was just like, you know, when we started the Duke Street Church, I told you about the lady that wanted to study and why I even started that church. You know, the blonde, the tattoo. There was a lady in town. She'd been in a car wreck. And she was laying in the hospital. And she said that when she called me and said, will you study with somebody? And I told her, well, I told her I'd study with anybody. And she was rough now. She was rough. And when she told me the story of why she called me, she said, I've never called a preacher in my life. She said, but I've been in this hospital for about a month. She almost died in a car wreck. And she said, every Sunday, there you are on that TV. She said, the first Sunday, I turned you. She said, then the next Sunday, she said, there you was again. And she said, I kept wondering, how's my television getting on that station? And she said, she turned me a second time. She said the third Sunday she was in the hospital, she'd been there for 4 weeks, she said, I got to looking for you. And then I found you. She said, so I listened. She's in a list in that fourth Sunday too. She said, so here I am. What are you going to do with me? You know, and, but, you know, that's providence. God's involved in these things. Because one thing the Old Testament says is that his eyes are open and a to and fro across the earth to find those who will glorify his name. So he's looking. And he will make whatever means he makes needs for that to happen. Now, once you get your prospect list, okay, start praying for these people. Now, I want you to pray for three things, okay, at least these three things. I want you to ask God, first of all, for opportunity to be of service to these people. Okay? Notice I said service. I want you to ask God to fix it so that you can do something for them. Secondly, ask God for wisdom to make the most of the opportunities you have. And thirdly, ask for boldness so that you can say what needs to be said when the door of opportunity is opened. Paul asked for all three of those things. Let me show you. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 5. He says, who then is Paul and who is Apollos, but ministers through whom you believed as the Lord gave to each one? I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. So then, neither is he who plants anything, nor he who waters, but God who gives the increase. Now notice, Paul was talking about the opportunity he had to plant. Now, go to Colossians 4, verse 3. And here he says, continue earnestly in prayer, being vigilant in it with thanksgiving. Meanwhile, praying also for us that God would open to us a door for the word to speak the mystery of Christ, for which I am also in chains, that I may make it manifest as I ought to speak. Walk in wisdom toward those who are outside, redeeming the time. Isn't that a wonderful passage? So he's telling you to do that. And then thirdly, ask for boldness, Ephesians 6, in verse 18 through 20. He says, praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, being watchful to this end with all perseverance and supplication for all the saints and for me, that utterance may be given to me, that I may open my mouth boldly to make known the mystery of the gospel. So here Paul was asking even for himself that he has the boldness to do that. Now, we've got our prospect list. We've seen that we pray over it. We pray for three specific things. Prayer should be specific. Now what I want to talk about real quick is how to build the bridge. How do you develop the relationship? Okay? How do I get that relationship to the point that I can share the message of Christ with people? Okay, there's some stages of relationships. The first one is what I call initial contact. That's your first stage in building a relationship through which the gospel can flow. Basically, when we talk about initial contact, that's the first movement on your part to try to approach this person. In order to do that, you need to choose to be where these people are. Okay, go to them. Be friendly and willing to talk. Don't go around where they are and just stand there. And then go back and say, they ain't ever going to obey the gospel. I stood there 40 minutes. They didn't say nothing to me. No, be friendly and talk. Take the initiative to meet people and make friends. And always try to leave people with a favorable impression. Don't call them lost sheep or get them up at 4 a.m. to talk to them. Okay? Don't chase them around barns. Don't stand outside the restroom door and preach at them. You're not going to win these people that way. Okay? Just sometimes the initial contact don't even have to be bringing up anything about church. You know what I'm saying? It's just breaking the ice, getting the situation to where, you know, when they see you again, they won't think you strange that you're talking to them. Here's a way that you can do this. Here's some activities. Be outside when your neighbors are outside. Have an open house. Invite the neighborhood. One of the things that we're going to do on our street here, as soon as I'm home, is have a cookout. Invite everybody up and down the street. Okay, good opportunity. We got 2 or 3 families that are new that's moved in. And so this is just the way we're going to do it. We're just going to say, why don't you all come on over? And we're having a little cookout. They'll show up. They don't know anybody. And so the first people, they're going to meet me, you know. And so maybe that'll help them. And they're going to be prospects for me at this time. Go to school activities with your children, PTA. You know, get involved in those kinds of things. Go welcome new neighbors when they come into your place. At work, some ideas are things like coffee and lunch breaks. Talk to people. Work projects together, business trips, you know, whatever. Meetings, seminars. Just seize opportunities. You know, sometimes when I go somewhere, I'll take somebody from work with me. And sometimes it may be a 2-hour drive to where we're going. You can say a whole lot in 2 hours, you know. And you can always turn the tables around to spiritual things. All right, that was stage one, initial contact. Stage two, become better acquainted. Okay? Now, here is where your goal is to simply get to know the person better. Find out what they like, where they're from, what their background is, okay, their interests. Look for then common things that you may have that you can build on with that person. Be patient. Don't force the relationship. Don't, you know, there is an old saying in the Bible, don't let your feet wear a big long path to the door next door, you know, and let your welcome stay too long. Because then you become an annoyance. But at the same time, do find out things about them. Do some things you have in common with them. Okay? Because, again, we're building a relationship. And during this process, don't hide your Christianity. Let your light shine early in the process so you're not just springing it on them later. Okay? And what I mean by that is not necessarily that I ask them to go to church, but, you know, one thing I always do is I say, you know, I heard a good speaker the other day at church. You go to church? Well, let me tell you what I heard. And I'll bring up something I listened to. You know what I'm saying? And see, it didn't sound like I was there to say, you know, there's some things I think you need to learn. But I just, in the casual conversation and the flow of it, I'll say, you know, yeah, I went to church last night and I heard so-and-so. And so, you know, he talked about, you know, that was really interesting to me. And I talk about it from that standpoint. Get them, sometimes they'll say, oh, well, really? You know what I heard? I was listening to, and then, you know, you start a conversation. Now, if you want to get them involved in Bible studies, here's the way I found that this happens. Instead of you trying to set up a Bible study with them, okay, you have it at your house, and you have it with other couples. So they don't feel like that you're isolating them out in these early stages. and are trying to put them on the spot. What we do is we started having some home devotions that we invited anybody from the church who wanted to come to come. Sometimes we'd have 20 people there. We always had dinner and we studied. We'd done that once a month. I then started encouraging those people from the church. These were all church folks. I said, now you all need to start bringing some friends that don't go to church with you to this, or at least ask them. So I went to school and I asked some people. I said, you know, on Thursday night we're having a Bible study. You're welcome to come. We're going to have dinner. And you'd be surprised the number of people showed up. You know why they came? Because they didn't feel like I was having the study for them. We were going to have it whether they were there or not. You see what I'm saying? So they came very comfortably. And I always had a topic that we were going to discuss that I knew was appropriate to them, but they didn't know I knew it was appropriate to them. You know, and we would discuss something and get them started, and then they show back up next time, and before long, they take the step. But that's a good way if you're going to use the Bible study approach. Now, as time goes on, they may want to study with you individually and independently as that relationship gets deeper. But to break that ice, if you have Bible studies in your home, invite some people from your work or whatever and just say, we have one once a month. You're welcome to come. If they don't bite on it right then, wait till the next time or whenever. If you have it once a week, say, we're having that to the Bible study. I'd like for you to come. You know, and I think you'll see that works. But learn as much about them as you can. Be positive in your dealings with them. Be complimentary. I mean, don't lie. Don't make up nice things about them. But look for things to say something good about. And if there's something bad to say, don't say it. Okay? As you're working with them. That'll help. Now, so you've initiated contact, right? And you have gotten a little better acquainted. Now that you know something about them, serve them. Start doing, you know, Jesus taught that service was what we're about, didn't he? And his model for leadership was a servant model. Not the CEO, not the head of the corporation, not the guy who sits behind closed doors and issues out edicts and tells people how they're going to do the job. But he had it from the standpoint of, I will serve you, and as I serve you, you will follow me. That's what he done, and that's what people did. So, at this point, you want to start serving these folks. Now, how do you do that? Well, there's all kinds of things. Look for opportunities. Let me give you some example. Volunteer to help with their kids. Provide transportation, babysit if they need it sometime. Take over desserts some night. Take a meal during a time of sickness, or if you know they're really experiencing a problem. Mow their lawn. Help them with any home project that you might see. But be there to help. Help work on their car. Send them a card. Ask them to help you. You'd be surprised at the number of people that look want to help somebody else. And so what I'm saying is just be kind. Do something for them. What that does then is that moves your relationship. Notice we're getting a little deeper all the time. There's the initial, get to know you, now I'm helping you, and now you're going to get ready to enter into what we call the friendship level. You develop some common interests, you learn to spend and have activities together and time together, and by this point, guess what? They have learned to love you and respect you, and when you start leading them to Christ, and what you say has meaning. They've seen you. They've been able to look at your life. They've been able to say that your life is in harmony with God's will, the best they know it. And then you just begin to share. Now, that takes me to our last part here. What do we share? Okay? We've seen that there's some steps to building the bridge, making initial contact, getting better acquainted, serving them, becoming just a good friend. You've made a prospect list. Now, what are we going to do to actually let the gospel flow? All right, first thing, share your faith with them. Okay? Share your faith with them. This is where you make it clear that you're a Christian in the nature of your conversations. Okay? Things that you're interested in. Also, at this point, conduct yourself in a way that people are aware of your faith. And don't try to say everything at one time and tell them everything you've ever known about the Bible. Okay? And ask questions a lot about what they believe. Oh, you believe that? How come? Because most people have a belief. And you share your faith in with them in that way. So in daily conversations, just interject your beliefs that are based upon God's words. Don't hesitate to speak of the special benefits and blessings of being a Christian. You know, the other day we were talking about, I've got, when we were getting ready to talk about selling our house, I mentioned it at work, and I said, not too apprehensive, I said, just, it'll be what the good Lord wills. If we need it, we'll get it. If we don't, we won't. You know, I said, because I got to sell mine before I can buy the other one. And I said, that's one of them said, yeah, we're in that, and that just stresses me out. And I said, well, I kind of look at it like this. I've got a place to stay now, and so if I don't sell it, I'll still have a place. And I said, if I don't, you know, I said, the Lord, he takes care of that. And they, yeah. Yeah, you know, this person didn't go to church, so got a hook in there now. I'm going to use that as things go on. So just use your daily conversations. Let them know about going to church and what you think. Then you need to witness the body of Christ before these people. Okay? They need to see that the church as a whole is involved with each other. For example, include other Christians from church in your social gatherings where this person is. Okay, if you have dinner, so I've got another couple coming. Well, make sure it's a couple from the church, you know, and say, this is so-and-so and so-and-so. They go to church with us. And, you know, let them see that there's some fellowship in the body with you all. And so once you've made your individual, shared your faith with them, then you let them get involved with some other people that are in the church. And then you expose them to the gospel. And what I mean here, now we get a little more formal. Here's where Bible studies start happening. I sit down, let me show you what the Bible says about things. And the way you work that is you invite them. I like to do it. I have much better luck rather than me saying, I'd like to come over to your house and have a Bible study with you. Most people say, oh, well, I just really don't have time. You know, they already feel paranoid. But I have always found it works best, always worked best for me when I say, we're having Bible study Thursday night. I'd really like for you to come. I think you'll enjoy it. And, you know, if they don't that time, I'll have another one. We're having another Bible study on Thursday night. We'd like for you to come. And then finally they'll show up. So that way they don't feel like you're having it just for them. They don't feel like it's a high-pressured sales job. You're just letting it go at that point. And then stick with things about basics. What faith is. What it meant for Jesus to die. What did he die for? You know. And then you've got to remember that you can help them, but they've got to let them make the decision. Some people at this point say the next stage is invitation. You invite them to obey the gospel. Well, I think if we've done our work well, they'll know. I usually ask things not like, do you want to obey the gospel right now? I just say, does this make any sense to you, what I'm telling you? You know, or do you understand what I'm trying to say? Or am I wrong on this? Tell me what you think. You know, that kind of thing. But I very rarely, and I'm not saying it's wrong to do, but I just very rarely will come out and say, do you want to obey the gospel? Because I figure if they do, they'll tell me. And I can tell if I need to ask that kind of question a lot of times. You know, like, or I might say, have you ever considered it? Have you ever considered becoming a Christian? Do you know what you got to do to take steps to get in Christ and live faithfully? You know, you can help them. But look, by this time, I'm not talking to ranked strangers, am I? You see what I'm saying? By the time you get around to this part of the process, you've already gone through those other levels. So you've built a relationship. See, we feel comfortable trying to have that kind of, I mean, uncomfortable. Trying to have that kind of conversation with somebody that you don't know makes you feel uncomfortable, don't it? Imagine how it makes them feel. You know, somebody that I've just first met, and they want to say, you know, one of the things that gets me as I travel around, a lot of times they want me to help with problems. And they bring me to somebody I've never laid eyes on. And they say, rebuke them, Sam. You know, I don't feel good doing that. I really don't. Don't know them. You know, who am I? All I'm going to do is make them mad. At me. You know, and that's, but if you go through the steps that we just talked about and you build this relationship with them, by the time you get down to these intimate questions of like, have you ever really considered becoming a Christian? What's holding you up? I figured by this time you know them well enough to where you can say that. And they're not going to bite your head off. But to go to somebody that you just met and try to talk like that, that ain't going to work. You know what I'm saying? They're going to walk off and they're going to think you some kind of crazy psychotic person. But build the relationship with them. And you know what to do. Just do it. And like I say, you just imagine. Look at the exponential way the church could grow. If all here at this congregation, what do y'all have on Sunday? 60. If all 60 folks led just one person to the Lord by next year, one person, that's all we're asking, you'd double your congregation size. You see what I'm saying? If everybody just formed a relationship, an intimate relationship with one person, and then let the gospel flow, and that person is one to Christ, you do the math. And I know it works. I mean, it works too well for me. You know, just in my conversations with folks. And now listen, you're going to have to study some. But let me tell you something. Don't feel like you have to know the answer to every question somebody that you've just met is going to ask you. Sometimes we let that stop us. I don't know the answer to every question. I always say things like, that's a good question. I don't know. But we'll try to find the answer. You know, and now I've got a second study coming. Ka-ching. See what I'm saying? Because I couldn't give them one right then. I'll finally say, hey, guess what? I got the answer. I'll be over in a minute. Click. You show up. You have your second study. So always use it to help yourself in that way. Right. Usually in those right. Usually in those instances, when somebody comes to me with a specific problem, I always give them an answer. You know, sometimes I, depends on, you know, the mood they're in as to how I answer them. You know, sometimes I can be just point blank, direct point. Sometimes I can tell this is one I'm going to have to say, well, you know, that's a pretty good question. Let me think. Now put that out again. You know, kind of let them lead me into to giving them the answer, toning it down. But most of the time, they're going to respect you for having an answer. Then you can also, and like you say, most of the time you know the answer you're going to give them isn't the one they really want. Because most people who aren't biblically oriented are shooting from their own, here's what I think I ought to do. What do you think from the Bible standpoint? You know, so you tell them. And then sometimes I try to work that around to where after I tell them, I'll wait a day or two. I come back and say, did you think any more about what we talked about the other day? And, you know, from there, I can usually figure out how to move into a different subject, you know, if that situation is taking place. But, you know, there's so many of those things, there's really no right or wrong way to do it. You got to play it by ear as it's going, you know, and then when you're in the heat of the battle. But generally, I think in answer to your basic question, when people ask me, and sometimes they ask hard questions, but I try to always give them an answer. Sometimes it might not be real detailed if I don't think it's going to be good to detail it all out. But I remember one night I went to a place where I was staying, and the man and woman were divorced and remarried. We're at the house where I was at. We were eating dinner, and she said, I got a question right here in front of about 15 people around the family table. She said, I've been married before, and so has he. What do you think about that? you know, I'm sitting there eating dinner. It's kind of like, somebody saying something? I answered her. She asked, you know, and I wasn't the first one who told her, you know, but she was trying out the new preacher. That was new going there. And so it was a very uncomfortable situation. But it was like everybody at the table, all 20 stopped and just turned. What's he going to say? I told her. But yeah, you get those awkward moments. And just... the whole time in my mind, Lord, don't let me down now. Help me, you know, and he does. But that's good because, yeah, I get a lot of those. What would you do? Here's what happened. That kind of stuff. Yeah, they should be. You know, there's sometimes it just depends. When I have Bible studies with women at home, generally I want Marlana there. If now, it may be that, because I've had women who've called and said, I want to talk to you privately. You know, they didn't want to divulge the information they were getting ready to divulge. And I've had some counseling sessions with women. But I won't have them while Marlana's away from the house. I've got a study right off the kitchen. We go in there, the door shut. I've got my desk so arranged that I'm on one side of the desk, they're on the other. And Marlana's just outside the door in the kitchen. You know, that's because there are people who want confidentiality. And then she needs to handle that. She's the one building the relationship. You know what I'm saying? She can share the message with those people. Now, she can involve me at any time, but she's got to remember she's the one who's built the relationship with this next door neighbor lady, for example. She's the one going shopping with them, so it's going to come best from her. But Marlana, a lot of times, will say, you know, let's ask Sam, you know, when there's a question or something like that. And, you know, but she knows how to work that for her. But there's nothing wrong if my wife was to lead that person to Christ herself, you know. And, of course, we would invite her to. Because, again, most of the converts I've made have not been through sermons. They've been through conversations. You know, just sometimes driving down the road, talking, you know, and then they see the need. And I think that probably happens.
You're saying, have you ever heard of a woman baptizing another woman?
No, I knew that question was coming. It went through my mind just when I was sitting there. And I thought, I'm not going to give that one away. Let's just see if we can get... We were a quarter till. we almost made it. No, I have not. And, you know, What do you think about that, Bill? That's a good question. And boy, he's good. I should have tried to match wits with him. But do what? You're not. No, that is a question. In fact, we had this conversation up at Gilstrap the other night. We got a guy who comes to Duke Street who was baptized, he says, when he was 12 years old. He can't remember what he was baptized into because he said his people were never church people. So I asked him, was he baptized for the remission of sins? You know, when I say into, was he a denominationalist? Baptized for the remission of sins in order to be saved. I said, what was your thinking? He said, well, I thought I did it so I wouldn't go to hell. Well, you know, that's a pretty good answer for me from that standpoint. He said it was for the remission of sins. So the question then comes up, do we use this man in service? So, you know, I've wrestled. He's never asked to be used. Okay, so, but in the back of my mind, I've been sitting here thinking, what am I going to do when he does? Or, I really need his help. He's been coming for 3 or 4 years. Takes communion. Faithful as he can be. So we brought this up at Duke Street. You know, do we accept his baptism? Are we in the position to even judge his baptism? If he tells me he was baptized in order to be forgiven of sins, is that between him and God? And I just go on what he was, you know, I mean, it's his heart for it. Are we judging when we say, yeah, I know that's what you think you were, but 25 years ago, I don't believe that's what it was. I didn't even know you, but I don't think that was it. So, you know, that question comes up. And then in that question, somebody asked Bob, can a woman baptize somebody? You know, I mean, that was one that came up. And there's not a prohibition against her baptizing anybody, but there's not an example of where one ever did that I know of in the scripture. You know, and then how much emphasis is placed on the person who does the baptizing anyway? They're simply a conduit to undergo the mechanism of getting them under the water and back up. Because I can remember the question came up, you know, when Alexander Campbell came over from Ireland or Scotland. He was Presbyterian. They sprinkled. He changed his view on baptism. And he wanted to be baptized for remission of sins. Well, he couldn't go to the Presbyterians. They sprinkled. So he went to a Baptist preacher, told him he wanted to be immersed for the remission of sins. The Baptist preacher said, well, Brother Campbell, I don't believe that baptism is for the remission of sins. And Campbell told him, said, don't matter what you believe, it's my heart that's responding. You know, he said, I just need you to douse me. So, you know, he did, which made sense to me. It really didn't have anything to do with the guy who was doing the baptizing. So, you know, there's a whole lot of questions there, Bob, that's really good and need to be thought out. Anybody got any comments they want to make about it? Go ahead, Dwayne.
Here's the other one. You weren't successful in timing out and dodging.
Do what?
We didn't run out of time.
Yeah, right, okay.
Spontaneously, when you asked to make a list, I just started ripping through the people I interact with and have the most in common and see primarily through my workday life. And unfortunately, I do a lot of traveling, but I could be fortunate. No way. Anyway, 3 out of 5 people and possibly 4 out of 5 people. We just cross them off the list, or put them on the bottom of the list.
Well, you know, you have to tell them at some point, you know, about what sin is. I'll share the message with them. I have, and I've even baptized people who have been in a second marriage. I don't feel like that I have. I'd have gotten in trouble for that one place. They churched me for a while because they said that I should have asked that question of that lady. She called me since having a meeting and said that I shouldn't have baptized her because she didn't say she was going to repent And I told him, I said, well, you know, I don't know whether she's going to repent or not. And I said, I did tell her what I thought. You know, because when she called me and I had a guy up at Gilstrap do the same thing, he waited on me outside one afternoon and told me, he said, will you baptize me? And I said, well, certainly, I didn't know. And he said, I got two living wives. And I said, well, you know that we'll not accept you into fellowship here. He said, I know that. He said, but if I walk down that aisle, will you baptize me? And I said, probably. And so, invitation's always come. Here he come. You know, and so I baptized him. You know, but we've never extended hand of fellowship. He'll come on Sunday morning.
But for the practical sense of holding, doing the relationship evangelism, is this really a waste of your time, I guess, is what I'm saying.
With those people?
They have them on the list.
Well, you know, I probably wouldn't start with those folks because there's going to be so much that, but again, you know, do we think, there may be somebody out there who says, I want to go to heaven enough to where I can get out of the sinful condition I'm in. You know, I don't know that. But generally that's probably not who I would think of first. But I would not preclude them at all. You know, I mean, because you never know with people when they might straighten their lives out.
Sam, I'm sure in 5 minutes you can't do justice to the question I'm going to ask, but I think one of our weaknesses, we have a weak weakness here, and we have over the last 2 or 3 years, we've probably studied with and baptized 15 or 20. I've got a list of them, and they're not here. Well, of course, some have moved away, and some are legitimate reasons, and there's still a few around. But we can bring people to Christ and get them into the church as babes in Christ. But do you know of the solution then? What does the church need to do after that, now that they're Christian? I feel like I have an ability to teach and baptize people.
Well, I tell you what I have done when I have several. I have a study for just those folks in my house. Invite them over, and we start getting into basics. Okay, I've brought them up to Christ. And then one of the things that we do is we have like discipleship 101. Now that you're a Christian, what's that mean? And we go through worship, we go through, because I think that all churches that I'm affiliated with, we do a decent job sometimes bringing them up to the point of baptism, but it's like we let baptism be the ending point rather than the beginning. You know what I'm saying? It's the end of the chain for us. We finally got them baptized, and then we're done. When in really, that's the new birth, and they've just been born again, and this is where they're starting. And we leave them out floundering around. So I have had private studies. And if I've got 3 or 4 that's been baptized, you know, within the same little time frame there at Duke Street, we will meet and our week somewhere and start just, you know, now that you're a Christian, here's what this means, and go through a discipleship course. We're going to talk about prayer, how to pray, talk about worship, talk about service, just things, you know, just the basics. But I think they need formal teaching in that, and they need nurturing during those first few months after conversion, years actually.
Hence my observation. Go ahead, Edward. I was just going to suggest, you talked about relationship conversion and relationship discipleship from there on.
Yeah, right.
As
to keep that going. And there's a lot of churches, even a lot of denominational churches, have discipleship courses. One on, you know, I see them advertised in the paper and, you know, in their bulletins that I pick up from time to time. something that they do through their Sunday school. We wouldn't do it through our Sunday school. We don't have it. But, you know, we could still have a private study in one of the elders' homes or just a member's home.
My emphasis was on relationship.
Certainly. Most of the time, we don't even do that. You know what I'm saying? We get them there, and then, okay, we're not your friend no more. You know, we baptize you, but you continue to make them a part of your life. Friendship. Continue to relate with them just like you were up to that point, and then use that to strengthen them.
But perhaps if your forte is bringing somebody and studying with them, maybe you can do a handoff.
Yeah, right. Let me introduce you to a good friend of mine and get them hooked up. Yeah, a lot of good things. Somebody back there had their hand up. Yeah.
I have a question. You know, one of Paul's tactics in 1 Corinthians chapter 9 was, he says, I became all things to all people so that by some means I might win some. Does that apply to us today? Was that in the right to an apostle? And if it does apply to us, how do we apply it to us?
Well, I have become all things to all men. I think that what Paul was saying was, like, on numerous occasions, of course, you know, Paul would never, first of all, we know Paul would have never done anything that he knew was sinful. Okay, so it excludes sinful activity. So the areas where Paul was saying, I've become all things to all men, meaning that he was trying to operate from the standpoint of where he knows they're coming from, so that he can meet them where they are. You know, his whole idea in Romans 14 is a really good, Bob was talking about that yesterday, a very good example of becoming all things to all men. You know, he talks about meats versus the vegetables. And he talks about how that we know that such is not wrong to eat. But Paul also said that if it would cause a brother to stumble, he would eat no meat. Which meant, I'm sure, that when he was with those who were of different persuasions on an issue that was not a matter of faith or sin, Paul was willing to conform to what would make the way of peace and edification. That's what I think he meant by saying, I become all things to all men. So in a situation where if he was amongst somebody who was, you know, we have liberties. And so Paul didn't deny that eating meat was a liberty afforded to Christians. But mature Christians will not allow their liberties to become matters of division or divisiveness. And so the more mature you are, the easier it is for you to conform to the wishes and desires of somebody who's perhaps not as strong as you are in the faith. So the real test of strength is sometimes seen in the willingness to let some things go. You know, that's what I think he was talking about. So like when he was among the Jews to the Jew, I became as a Jew, which meant their customs that were not sinful to observe. Paul said he would observe them when he was with them. To the Gentiles, their customs that were not sinful to observe, he would observe them. And he was doing that, though, so that he might have a relationship that he could work with them on. And I think that basically we need to try to be that way, too. Accommodating, you know, and understanding of where people are.
Sam, one thing that's been pretty difficult for many of us to understand. Yes, when Paul said, you know, to the Jew I became a Jew, to the Greek, to the weak. Well, that's why I believe in Acts 21 he went into the temple and paid the charges for those other four men, because he was advised by the elders to do that for the sake of peace. And there were so many thousands, they said, we know you're going to be here, and you're teaching that to the Gentiles. The Jews among the Gentiles, you know, don't have to do these things. It seems like having to do not with sacrifices, but with maybe ceremonial laws.
Yeah, right.
But Paul felt licensed to do that.
Right, and you know that those things weren't wrong in and of themselves for him to do. Right. You know,
sacrifice would
have been right.
But not a ceremonial.
ceremonial law. No. And so that's what I think he meant when he says I became into the weak. He didn't mean he became as sinful as the weak, but he was going to deal with those who were spiritually immature on their level. You know, there's times when we don't. We sometimes lack patience with them. Anything else?
Appreciate it.
Okay. I'll turn the services back over to you guys.
Thank you very much, Brother Samuel.
Okay.